Well, it's profits and the Fed as US earnings season kicks into high gear this week, and obviously a little bit of Chinese regulation angst. The next couple of days are going to be monumental as everyone tries to figure out how strong corporate fundamentals are at the moment and in what context that's happening in terms of the economic outlook and policy settings. Alphabet, Apple and Microsoft set to publish quarterly results later today, with Amazon due later in the week. In addition, we've got the Federal Reserve beginning its two-day meeting later today, with investors set to scrutinize a statement and press conference from Fed Chair Jay Powell. That will certainly give us some further clues on tightening and tapers and all of that. But it's time to have a bit of fun and highlight a few counters worth adding to your portfolio, with all the usual caveats that a few stocks or ETFs does not a diversified portfolio make. There are a few interesting themes in the market at the moment, and we're in the midst of US earnings season, so our focus is on US listed investment instruments, but they could just be listed there with a focus in other jurisdictions like China. Let's welcome our panel, Carolyn Crimmin, Portfolio Manager at AdviceWorks, Nessa Nair, Senior Portfolio Manager at Sasfin, and Henry Biddlecombe, Portfolio Manager at Anchor Capital. Carolyn, your first pick is not a tech company, thank goodness, because there are lots of tech companies today. Home Depot, and over the last 15 years, a period which really began at the peak of the housing bubble, Home Depot stock has generated annual returns of 17% a year. So that's outperformed the S&P 500 by roughly 7% a year. How has it managed to do this and fend off the likes of Amazon?
Well, first of all, you know, if you want to go and get some decor, if you want to get a hardware, you want to get a spade or something, you kind of want to go have a look at it. It's very difficult to judge something on the internet. So I think this is one of those companies that will always have a footprint. And they have a massive footprint. You know, they're the largest home improvement company in the world. They have economies of scale. They benefited in the lockdown, you know, people fixing up their homes. They're going to benefit, you know, even when people return back to the office, because a lot of people are staying at home still for part of their week, and they want their home to look nice.
So you've been sitting at home on the couch, looking at that crack on the wall, saying, I've got to fix that, I've got the time to do it. Looking at your couch, saying, I probably need a new couch as well. So we do know that the home improvement, DIY, and those sorts of themes have tended to benefit. How do you see that going now as the US in particular starts opening up?
Well, like I said, there's still going to be an element that are remaining from home, but remaining to work from home. But also, just remember, if you look at economic stats, you know, you can look from economic figures and in the financials of banks like JP Morgan, the demand for new homes is at an all-time high. And much of this is backlogged because the shortage of suppliers like cement and timber. So there's tailwinds for this type of business just from new growth, not even from the existing home stock that is out there for months, if not years. And then there's also that growing online presence that's grown at 25%. They've invested $10 billion into growing their online presence.
So they're not ignoring that.
Well, I think it probably is.
I was going to ask you about the valuation, because it is pretty much priced to perfection. Interesting part of the business, though, having a look at it, is also much like builders servicing that contractor market as well, the independent contractor. And we don't often talk about that, but that must be a big chunk of earnings as well.
It is a big chunk of earnings. You know, me going in to buy curtains or an appliance, you know, only gets them that far. So, you know, if you're going to buy something like timber, which at the moment is going to hurt them a bit, or cement or bricks, you know, the chances are that it's not you or me going to get it. It is that contractor that's going to get it. And I think what is happening now is you're seeing the big builders, you know, very much focused on trying to build that housing stock. So I think this is really a small contractor market as far as home improvements go.
Nathan, you've gone straight for the big clubs here. You've got big tech, the three A's, Apple, Amazon and Alphabet. Let's start with Apple reporting later today. And I think the company, while not providing detailed guidance, has warned that there could be an issue because of supply chains and chip shortages and that kind of thing. What are we expecting from Mr. Regularity, and that is Apple?
Yeah, Mike, you know, it's Apple has sort of made a name for itself, I think, in the last 15 years by coming up with new inventions, new technologies. Let's not forget the iPad, the Apple Watch, together with the iPhone. And I think it's going to be a similar year for them. I think last year a lot of focus was on the pandemic, and it was difficult for them to to have. Although they introduced the iPhone 12 last year, but it wasn't anything substantially so large that it could catch the awe of investors. So I think this year we're going to see it. Of course, a big drive, and this is something we're going to look for in the results, has been how they developed that service revenue stream. You know, for many, many years, Apple traded at a huge discount to its peers because it was unclear as to how they were going to do that. In the last few set of results, they've shown that they're able to develop that, and it's now becoming a bigger and bigger portion of overall revenue. So I think that's the one thing that will be looking in. And of course, the race for 5G is on in a big way in the US, and now I expect that Apple will, maybe not now, because it's normally the September cycle that they run it, although that's about a month away, they'll be hinting at some new sort of devices that they want to put through, that's going to try and capture that market, get a leapfrog on some of their peers.
That is the exciting bit for Apple, is having a look at what innovations are going to come out of a company that does tend to innovate, but innovate within a very closed ecosystem. And we do see from a regulatory perspective, Ness, and that's one area that we're starting to see challenged to an extent with that ongoing court case between Apple and Fortnite game maker Epic. How much of a risk do you see that to Apple's revenue from everything that it generates inside its ecosystem, charging that 30% margin if you're going to be buying through the App Store and that kind of thing?
You know, Mike, these court cases are just, they're just exactly that. You know, I think a lot of us, tend to get very excited about it. But the fact of the matter is, these court cases can drag on for years and years and years while Apple maintains the status quo and while they look to diversify away, from the likes of apps that, that seem to be giving them trouble. The fact is, they do have a platform. That platform, in my view, is worth something because it reaches out to billions of subscribers out there, who want to use an Apple device. And, I suppose, maybe 30% is too high. I don't know what the right number is, actually. Maybe 20% is too high. But, the naysayers are focused on those sort of things, Apple is busy, growing market share and growing revenue in other aspects of things. So to answer your question, I don't think it's going to make a huge impact. I think it's out there. We know about it, but I don't really see it, affecting the investment case for Apple as much as probably the media would like to think it does.
Now, in the meantime, Apple's just smashing records, bursting through $2 trillion market caps, and that would make it, I think, the seventh or eighth largest economy in the world or something ridiculous. It's bigger than the entire Frankfurt Stock Exchange at $2 trillion. Henry, it's the one stock that we've got a cross shareholding in, shall we say, on the panel today, because you've also gone with three big clubs. Apple, let's pick up the first one, which is in your bag as well. Aren't you concerned when it comes to Apple that all of the incremental innovations are not going to lead to that next big bang product? Surely we've reached peak iPhone or peak iPad. What can it do next?
So that's exactly what I think most investors are asking right now. And we kind of back solved for it. So we asked ourselves, what would it take for Apple to double again over the next 5 years? Because as you say, it's an important call. It now constitutes around 6% of the S&P 500. So it's a stock that you need to have the right view on. And it all centers around the services business. And the interesting thing is there they make a gross margin of around 70% versus the 30% gross margin they make on the hardware. So your incremental contribution margin on $1 of services revenue is more than double that of the hardware business. So they don't need to double the size of the business again to double their profitability. In actual fact, when we did the numbers, you only need their services business to compound at around 30% per annum for the next 5 years for Apple to double its profits by 2026, okay? And for the second quarter of the current financial year, services actually grew at 27% year on year. So they're basically there on pace. And I don't think that's the consensus view at the moment. So I think that Apple by 2026 is a $300 to $350 share, and it's sitting at around $145, $150 today. So we like it.
And the regulatory issues that we've discussed, sideshow?
Well, I think, the counter argument there is, as a software developer, what would you be willing to pay for immediate access to a walled garden of 1.5 billion potential customers? I think 30% sounds like a very reasonable number, don't you? And it seems like that argument has a lot of traction in the courts. So I'm not panicked about their ability to maintain a 30% take rate in the App Store.
And that is the beauty of these tech companies that have got the incumbent first mover advantage and have managed to build up these massive subscriber bases, audiences, call them what you will if you're looking at Facebook. Carolyn, you've gone with another good old brick and mortar business, Costco, and it's one of those businesses that's got what every retailer wants, a very loyal customer base. It's often said that if you're a shopper in the US and if Costco doesn't stock it, you probably don't need it or want it because it sells almost everything. What's the investment thesis?
Well, for those who don't know, this is a little bit like a macro, but, you know, look at it as a more sophisticated version with high quality items. In fact, it has fewer products than your Walmarts and things like that. So it really focuses on those high sale items and the high quality items. What I like about this is that it makes its money from membership fees. So it sells its product at a pretty much a large discount to other retailers. So it really focuses on making that shopping experience a bit of an adventure. Again, this is one of those physical stores. You know, you want to go see it because you want to go and explore and see what they've got that's actually new. What I love about this is a beneficiary of higher inflation. You know, as consumers, as we know in the US, are being a bit stretched right now, especially with food price inflation picking up. So people tend to gravitate towards this type of business in that type of environment. Just even from a cost point of view, you know, we've seen the rollout of no-name brands in all of our retailers and how profitable that is of it. They're particularly successful with that. They've got a very small amount of no-name brands at the moment, but they're growing in their groceries and apparel. And again, it is high quality items. It's not... You know, it's not that lower cost thing, you know, where you buy a pair of pants and it shrinks, you know, not because you're sitting at home, but really because you've thrown it in the washing machine once.
I haven't had to buy a pair of pants in a long while. I've forgotten. Lots of jackets and tops in this Zoom era. Can't wait for that to end. Just quickly, what's the risk to Costco's model at the moment?
You know, I have to say, I don't really think much at all. I think the biggest risk when you look at a business like this is obviously competition with the online environment. And when I'm looking at that, I'm looking at Amazon, of course. But again, if you can produce a store that is an experience to go into, there's some people, you know, like me, you're still going to want to go and wander around. There's going to be some consumers that just shop online, and then there's going to be a hybrid, and they're really looking at that hybrid model. You know, you don't necessarily want to get toilet paper delivered to you. You might get your toilet paper delivered to you, but you want to go and see physically what you're actually buying as far as little odd little items are going to be and your clothing.
There's an Amazon, and clearly is Costco's big competitor. And when founder Jeff Bezos is not jetting off into space, he's now chairing the business. He's handed over to Andy Jassy. Alexa, play My Life by the Beatles. What does Andy Jassy now bring to the Amazon stable?
Yeah, I think you know, I think a lot of us are going to ask that question. Certainly, you know. This results announcement that we're going to see on Thursday is going to be one of the key things we look at, is exactly, you know, what sort of dynamism, if you can call it that, does he bring in compared to Bezos, who was, you know, ultimately just a dreamer that dreamt this business up and was able to deliver on it. Through his passion. So it's going to be an interesting one, I think, you know, for him in terms of, you know, his own background in AWS. But for me, you know, the story about Amazon is going to be, they had a great quarter last year, right? Remember, we were, the US economy, like the rest of the world, was in almost complete lockdown. Everybody was ordering stuff online. They had a massive tailwind as a result of the pandemic. And while that was happening, their AWS business, this is their cloud infrastructure business, also benefited, from businesses adopting the cloud and people working from home. And the question now is, what does the second quarter of 2021 look like? Are we going to see a slowdown from those numbers? Because the economy kind of opened up a little bit, because people were allowed to go into physical stores, did they rather choose that than shopping online and Amazon? And, the market expectations are around sort of 29 to 30% revenue growth. I think for me, this tech results season is going to be largely about revenue growth rather than earnings. So I want to see whether or not they're able to maintain that and what gave rise. If they do manage to achieve that 30% revenue growth, what happened in this second quarter that will most likely sustain itself in future quarters, given that they had a very good base event.
A very good base effect indeed. And back to Andy Jassy and where he came from, Amazon Web Services. And I think a big focus is going to be on how much that is growing in terms of market share. One of the biggest cloud providers in the world. We see a lot of banks migrating key infrastructure globally over to the cloud. And if you look at the focus, I think Bezos, it's right to say that his focus was on blistering growth for Amazon. Jassy's focus might be on corporate responsibility, because if you look at Amazon's 14 corporate principles, they included deliver results, bias for action, customer obsession. But a few days before Jassy took over, Amazon renamed them leadership principles, and it added two: strive to be the Earth's best employer, and success and scale bring broad responsibility. Is this a recognition that those on the Capitol Hill are really scrutinizing big tech players, and they need to be seen to be doing something? Nason?
Yeah, it's an interesting one. I remember many years ago I read the book on Walmart's rise to stardom and the challenges they had, particularly around labor. And I think that's a big issue with Amazon as well, what they pay their workers on an hourly basis, whether they do more good in society, those sort of questions. And I remember that, in the book they spoke about renaming their workers as associates, giving them titles and things like that. And I'm not sure that, that necessarily addressed the hourly rate that workers were being paid. We talk about this. Remember, we spoke about earlier in the break as well, Meituan, the Chinese company that's been targeted now, that's given rise to the 7% or 8% fall in the NASDAQ share price today through Tencent, about how they are treating, their delivery workers. So I think there's a lot of focus, on how employees are being treated across the board. But I think one needs to remember that we invest in these companies. Ultimately, we expect them to be good corporate citizens, without a doubt, not to break the law. But ultimately, we expect them to deliver a return on investment. Amazon at the current share price, I think it's going to be the responsibility, of the new manager, the new management rather, to make sure that investors' expectations are still maintained, notwithstanding how they choose to, present themselves to the market and to the regulators.
Absolutely. I think Facebook, Henry, your second book, second pick, is taking this line, because they've been accused by President Biden, when he lumps all social media platforms together, of spreading misinformation, of killing people because of the anti-vaxxer theories. And then there was a blog post called Moving Past Finger Pointing, and in short, Facebook was saying that it's not their fault. It's surely the fault of the president for failing to get 70% of Americans vaccinated by the 4th of July. So this tells you, this is an organization, yes, is in the crosshairs of regulators, but is going to stand up. And if you look at the numbers for the quarter ended March, FB's ad sales soared 48% from last year, despite all of the regulatory headwinds. What do you like about Facebook?
Yeah, so let's talk about what I like about Facebook first. The last decade's kind of been about the migration of business from business version 1.0 to business version 2.0. That is the digitization of business. So those companies that have run ahead of that trend have done very well. Those companies which have left behind have been decimated. And what I like about Facebook is it's become sort of a business enablement platform, where it's helping that sort of small to medium business segment migrate online. So it's not just an advertising business anymore. It's a full service platform that allows you to market, sell, and deliver your products and to deal with your customer relationships after the fact via a communications platform like WhatsApp. And I think that's where the Facebook investment case is going to pivot over the next 5 years. And you know, on top of that, the share is quite reasonably valued. You're paying a sort of forward earnings multiple of 25 times earnings, for a business that, which is that dominant and which has such impressive growth prospects, is actually a very reasonable price to pay. Mm. You know, can we blame Facebook for driving a lot of the fake news and a lot of the sensationalism out there at the moment? Yes, we can. But the truth is, I don't think that that's a Facebook fault. I think that's a media fault. I mean, if you look at the media business model, going back to the beginning of time, sensationalism has always driven reaction and interaction. And that's ultimately how these companies monetize, you know, the attention time that they get from their viewers. And Facebook's no different. How they address that through time, I don't know. And it's probably an issue that's here to stay. But I don't think that it detracts from the investment.
It's human nature. If it bleeds, it leads. You can't blame
the
platform.
Yeah,
you can't blame the platform. Carolyn, PayPal. And what's not to like about a payments provider going, you know, in an online environment with all these tailwinds? What's the investment thesis?
Well, like Visa and MasterCard, you know, these payment systems are cash machines. They really are. It was one of the first of the, you know, the one online payment systems, and right now it's seeing a lot of competition. So I think, you know, people are worried, you know, is that competition going to take away a little bit from PayPal? I still think this is a good investment because, you know, the trend is your friend. I don't think we've yet reached peak online payments. I mean, I think, you know, Nesson touched on it, you know, with Amazon, you know, this thing is going to grow. Facebook as well, you know, the online economy is growing. You know, people assume that it's actually huge. It is huge. But in relation to their traditional economy and their traditional banking system, it's still actually got, it can probably easily double or treble or quadruple in the next 5 years. And we might actually see that happen. In fact, it's very, very likely. You're seeing a steady increase in active accounts and transactions. They're expecting a 20% revenue growth. You know, somebody did chat, I forget who it was, about revenue. You know, these guys' revenue is incredibly strong. And I think what is nice about PayPal is it does have a net trust balance. You know, people do tend to think that if you're going to go through PayPal as opposed to one of these other, you know, smaller online payment systems, that you're going to be more protected. And I think that is a very, very big issue. And it's going to become more and more important as you're seeing, you know, these cyber attacks become more prevalent in the coming years.
Yeah, was Nesson talking about Amazon's revenue that we're going to be watching out for? And Nesson, your final pick, Alphabet, as we've got about 90 seconds to go. In 45 seconds, what do you like about Alphabet?
Yeah, so earnings expected to almost double. Of course, last year, the second quarter, not much advertising having taken place. A lot of companies were afraid of the lingering impacts of the pandemic and sort of contained a lot of their unnecessary or not very unnecessary, but a lot of their expenditure that they could have cut, and advertising was one of them. So Facebook and Alphabet have a really tough quarter in 2020. We're expecting a big turnaround there. You know, as I said, earnings almost expected to double. The shares up about 50% or so for the year, pricing in some of that benefit. So we'll just have to see whether or not, you know, the share price correctly predicted the earnings trajectory.
Yeah, as we know, markets are forward-looking pricing machines as well. Henry, your last one, Alibaba, obviously the big talk in markets over the last few days since Friday, is that increasing regulatory net tightening around all kinds of tech companies. What do you like about Alibaba in that environment?
Yeah, look, I mean, Alibaba, we all know what it does. Everyone's familiar with the business. I just think at this point in time, sentiment towards the big Chinese tech stocks and Chinese tech in general is in the toilet. And that's, you know, typically a good time to start accumulating positions in these companies. I think Alibaba certainly sits at the lower end of the risk spectrum, where it'll come out on the other side just fine. You know, and more than a lot of the risk is now priced into the stock. You know, when you look at the Nasdaq Golden Dragon Index, I mean, some of those businesses are down 95%. at this point in time from the peak in February. I think Alibaba is down around 40% from its peak. And I think in 2 years' time, we'll be through this. Things will look a lot more normal again. And it could be a sort of $350 to $400 stock in time. And you're getting it at sub $200 today.
Yeah, I was reminded of the drawdowns in Tencent during the gaming regulation crisis, in inverted commas, of 2019. It was only a couple of years ago, but you would have been handsomely rewarded for going against the tide of fear at the time. That's all the time we have for at the moment, and some amazing picks there from our panel. Carolyn Crimmin, Portfolio Manager at AdviceWorks, Nesson Nair, Senior Portfolio Manager at Sasfin, and Henry Biddlecombe, Portfolio Manager at Anchor Capital, for some heavyweight access to one of the most sought-after markets in the world. You'd be hard-pressed to beat those eight picks. We had Facebook, Alibaba, Apple, Alphabet, Amazon, Home Depot, Costco, and PayPal.